It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We're getting closer and closer to the iPhone launch. We'll talk about the latest rumor roundup, whether there is or is not an iWatch due in September. What about that 5.5-inch phone? Also news about Macs and more. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 415, recorded August 12th, 2014. You're rolling it wrong. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of Legal Plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 40 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 20% off any image file on your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code MacBreak814. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers all your Apple subjects there, your Macintosh, your iPhone, your iPad, your iPod, anything with an Apple logo, made in California, designed in China, or vice versa. Renee Ritchie is here from the fabulous iMore.com. Great to see you, Renee. Welcome.
Morning, Leo. Thank you so much.
Good morning.
Great to be here.
Yep. Alex Lindsay is on the way. He'll join us in a moment. He's on the road from the airport. And Andy Anatko is also here. Good to see you, Andrew.
Always good to see you, Leo. Always good to see you, Renee. And always good to see an empty chair that will soon be filled by Alex.
Or Elijah. We don't know yet. Somebody. Sad to say, it won't be filled by Robin Williams. Of course, terrible, terrible news yesterday. And I think we're all still reeling. You know, Robin was a geek. I remember seeing him several times at Macworld Expos. Problem is, he couldn't really go to Macworld Expo and enjoy it because he'd be hounded all through the hall. But it's just such a terrible loss. And one I think we feel a little even more keenly here in the Bay Area, because he was somebody who just was everywhere in the Bay Area, very happily, lived very happily here. I don't know if you guys want to say anything about it, but I couldn't start the show
without
mentioning it.
Also, that he comes from an era where, remember, like in the 90s and the late 80s, when Apple fans felt besieged and that maybe Apple's not going to be around for 3 or 4 or 5 years. So when you find out that someone who you really like, who's really, really cool, is also one of those rare people who uses a Mac, it's like, oh, he's one of us. He could stay in my guest room because I feel as though we're already friends and know each other very, very well.
And of course, his maybe his very last professional work was doing an ad for the iPad Air.
We don't read and write poetry because it's cute. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race. And the human race is filled with passion. Medicine, law, business, engineering, these are noble pursuits necessary to sustain life. But poetry, beauty, romance, love, these are what we stay alive for. Quote from Whitman, O me, O life, of the questions of these recurring, of the endless trains of the faithless, of cities filled with the foolish. What good amid these, O me, O life? Answer, that you are here, that life exists, and identity. That the powerful play goes on, and you may contribute a verse. Powerful play goes on, and you may contribute a verse. What will your verse be?
You know, it's
We kind of made fun of that ad because it was, well, frankly, so intellectual and seemed well so beyond heavy. So heavy. Mm-hmm. And much the more heavy now. And you listen to those words and him saying those, and wow.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's the bench that that his character and Matt Damon's character sat on during, at the Public Garden during Good Will Hunting has been known as the Good Will Hunting bench, sort of unofficially. There's no plaque on it, and now that's turned into sort of a makeshift shrine here.
Yeah,
because I think it's because of stuff like that, some of the lofty work he did that made a lot of people connect to him in that way.
You know, of course, the monologue is from Dead Poets Society. Beautiful, beautiful monologue. And at reading some of the coverage, I got the impression that was re-recorded. Did anybody sit down and compare it to the actual monologue in the movie? Because I think he re-recorded that recently. I don't know.
The audio seems a little 1990s. Yes,
that's why I assumed they just lifted it from the movie. But then I'm reading coverage and it says he recorded it, so I'm not sure.
Well, don't believe what people have to push out.
Yeah,
I really feel, I don't know, I wouldn't say contempt. Actually, I think I should feel more sympathy for people who are working for certain sites where they themselves are sad when one of their favorite entertainers dies. But now that they know that, okay, it's now my responsibility here at 1 a.m. to come up with things to post online on the site tomorrow that will get clicks for all the people who are going to start searching for stuff about Robin Williams.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I feel a little bit sorry for those
folks. It's kind of creepy,
folks.
Isn't it? So sad.
Yeah. Well, it's their job, and I don't like to judge because I'm sure that when they signed up for it, they didn't say, "Oh, well, at some point I'm going to whip up a maelstrom of sad feelings about things that we could then turn into ad clicks."
Yeah.
But it's, oh well.
Anyway, it's hard. You know, it's hard to do anything but just sigh and. Yeah. A tragic, tragic end to one of the greatest. So, lots of news about a Mac, but one of the things that kind of intrigued me, and we might start off with something a little bit more speculative. You, actually, Renee Ritchie, talked about it on iMore.com regarding ARM-based Macs.
Yes.
One of the things that happened, Jean-Louis Gasset on Monday wrote a piece in which he actually is quoting, mostly quoting somebody else, a young guy. When he wrote the original piece in 2011, 3 years ago, he was 16, Matt Richman, in his blog post, Apple and ARM Sitting in a Tree. So this was 3 years ago. But now with the release of the new K1 chip from NVIDIA, the new Tegra K1, a 64-bit chip that is faster than many desktop processors, it makes me wonder if there isn't something to this. What do you think of all of this? I mean, it's pure speculation, as you point out.
So Apple is not a dumb company, and if there's anything that any of us could think that Apple might be interested in, chances are that they have prototyped it, they have it in testing, they have it in development. We know they had the Marklar, the Intel-based Macs running for a long time before they switched to Intel running in the labs. We know that Apple has had interns porting things like OS X to ARM, the OS X kernel to ARM. The rumor has it they have ARM-based Macs, some running iOS, some with touchscreens, all of that in the lab. But that's a far cry from a shipping product. The switch to Intel happened because they could get better power efficiency. There was a whole bunch of advantages that came to switching to Intel, including PC compatibility. They could run boot camp. They could run emulators. Switching to ARM, I think a lot of lay observers are excited because of the idea of Apple owning the whole stack, where they see the A7 chip and how powerful it is, and they start to dream of ARM-based Macs. But for Apple to do this, they would have to have as compelling a reason. It would have to be as beneficial to them to undergo the pain of the transfer of having to figure out, are they going to run iOS? Will they get OS X onto an ARM chip? Would everyone who makes OS X apps have to port them to an ARM chip? Would they emulate existing x86 apps? How would they handle Windows for people who still need Windows and Enterprise? Would there be a boot camp? There are so many questions and so much pain involved that I think this stuff is absolutely in the realm of speculation and maybe a little bit of fan fiction at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the other, you see some benefits, but you're right to underscore the trials that would go along. Apple did it so well with Intel that maybe people forget that. I mean, Rosetta and Carbon were done so beautifully that I think a lot of people didn't feel much pain making the transition. Developing,
I mean, they have those. They have those things. It's just a question of those becoming shipping products,
yeah,
and the decision to make those shipping products. Apple, when Apple says things like people don't like touchscreen Macs aren't a good idea, they're not ergonomic, it's not because they're pulling out of their hat. It's because they made touchscreen Macs,
yeah,
and they tested them significantly, and that was determination. And as far as I know, the ARM Macs, they dangle those over Intel and say, how late is Broadwell going to be again? And it's really effective for that, but it's probably not effective for stuffing store shelves yet.
And as Renee says, I mean, when they did the transition to Intel, you forget that PowerPC was not dead, but oh boy, the trajectory of that CPU was going way, way down. Apple was really, it was, as I recall, Apple was the only main client for that CPU that wasn't like embedded systems and controller systems. Whereas if they switched to Intel, so long as Microsoft Windows continues to run on Intel machines, Intel was going to continue to make hot processors, next generation, generation after that, generation after that. So there was nothing but upside to switching to Intel. Given that the hassles to developers is not something that Apple is going to care about back then. So if they were to switch to ARM, it would have to be something so compelling, such as their ability to really tailor make a CPU to a specific model,
which they could do.
Which they could do. I mean, if one thing that would be possible if they were to adopt this is to simply say that from now on, the CPU, the official CPU of the MacBook Air is going to be ARM. The official CPU of the MacBook Pro and the desktop line is going to be Intel. Because if people do want that higher performance, if people do want compatibility with Windows, it's there. But for the purposes of producing a $1,000, but and now $900, and then in the future $800 ultralight notebook that gets not just 10 hours, not just 12 hours, but now 17 or 18 hours of battery life, and could do all kinds of extra tricks that they haven't even thought of yet, because they can simply design an ARM chip to do exactly what they needed to do for this product. That would be an upside, but it's not as simple as simply, you know, putting a new sticker on a different box.
People might forget that it was Apple that's founded ARM back in 1990. Yeah. ARM originally stood for Acorn RISC machine. Acorn Computers, which is a popular computer in the UK, was a RISC processor, which stands for Reduced Instruction Set. Intel processors and all the main processors, including the PowerPC, although less so the PowerPC. I guess maybe PowerPC might have been a RISC processor.
RISC. Yeah.
Were CISC, complex instruction sets. In other words, the basic instruction set, the basic fundamental capabilities of the processor on Intel chips, there are many more base instructions. The instruction set is much larger than on ARM. It's a reduced instruction set. And the idea being that you can reduce complexity, and the chip, that's one of the reasons the chip is lower power, it's a simpler
x86
chip.
X86 is a mess.
Yeah, x86, because of its need to support legacy. In fact, even Intel wanted to get away from x86, attempted to, and was pushed back because of they needed to support legacy hardware.
John Siracusa had a really good analysis of this. And one of the things he brought into, he reminded us all, is that, you know, ARM is going up in performance, but Intel's going down in power. Haswell is very good. Broadwell is going to be very good. But also, you know, Apple can design any chip they want, but who's going to fab it? Right now, Intel's the only one who could fab 14 nanometer. And it'd be hard for Apple to say, you've got to fab our A8, A9, A10, whatever chip before you do Broadwell, or before you do Broadwell, or before you do Skylake, or before you do whatever is next from that. So designing the chip is only one part of it.
Right.
Getting it fabbed is a second part, and currently that's still mostly an Intel game.
ARM is a what they call a fabless company. They don't make chips. They design chips and license them to other people, including Samsung, who makes the chips, currently makes the chips for the iPad and the iPhone. Qualcomm, which makes very powerful ARM chips. NVIDIA.
It's kind of an interesting question, though, because keep in mind that they're already fabbing ARM chips by the tens of millions to put into iOS devices.
Right.
So there's certainly capacity there. But once again, it's not something they would do just to say that they would do it. It's also if you are harping on certain negative popular aspects of Apple, it's not something they would do just to simply say, we don't want to be beholden to Intel anymore. They're perfectly fine with being beholden to Intel so long as it's helping them to make the devices that they want to make. So when it turns out that they can no longer make the devices they want to make, and the limitation is Intel, that's when you'll start seeing a lot of serious velocity on these rumors.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you do see a performance loss. Although I have to say, this new K1 is better than the Celeron. I mean, it's not up to an i3, i5, i7, but they're coming on with power. It's both companies are moving in each other's direction. Intel very much wants to be where ARM is, and ARM, I don't know if ARM wants to be where Intel is, but ARM certainly wants to be more powerful. Apple originally founded ARM and supported ARM for the Newton. It was in the Newton. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They divested their ownership in ARM quite a while ago.
And it's also, it's good to point out that ARM has two ways to do business with them. One is to take their reference designs like a Cortex A9 or A15 and just, you know, use those chips. What Apple has is a master license for the ARM instruction set. So they can, the A7 chip is based on the ARM reference architecture for ARM64. So Apple basically made their own chip. They didn't just use one of the reference designs.
Right.
I think that's part of what got people so excited about the idea of Apple making desktop chips.
Apple has a lot of many, I believe, thousands of chip designers and people responsible for chip design at in-house. They bought, didn't they buy PA RISC, the HP?
They bought PA Semi.
Yeah, PA Semi, the
and
makers of PA RISC.
They bought several. And the interesting thing is it's not easy to find good chip designers. Finding engineers is hard. Finding good chip designers is really hard. And when a lot of them left their previous companies, Apple was one of the companies that hired them. And I think that's why, like, it's weird to say, you know, Samsung makes the chips. Why isn't Samsung much further ahead than Apple? Why didn't Samsung go to 64-bit earlier? They're the ones making the chips. But Apple hired the brains that were designing those chips. And I think that's what let them get, you know, pretty far ahead in mobile.
Yeah. Another thing to keep in mind is that ARM is so, it's such a popular platform because the entire fundamental nature of computing has changed in the past 10 years, where it is a CPU that's really optimized to be a great mobile processor chip, or to speak a little bit more broadly, it's a great chip to put into a computer that is okay to have to impose sacrifices on the user. So if you're putting into a tablet, great. If you're putting into a phone, great. If you're putting it even into a Chromebook, something where all it has to do is run a limited operating system and a web browser, also great. But when you really try to run massively multi-threaded apps, a lot of things that have to happen absolutely synchronized perfectly to streaming HD video, and there's no excuse for dropping frame rates or anything like that, that's when you realize what a bad bag of hurt putting a mobile processor into anything with a desktop form factor is going to be.
I wonder though if there's some sort of hybrid that might not happen. Either a iPad Pro that is, you know, verging on the MacBook Air territory, or and we talked about this on Sunday. Rob Reed suggested, what if Apple put ARM only in the MacBook Air, made a very low power? I mean, the MacBook Air could have 20 hours of battery life with an ARM chip in it. It would admittedly not be as high power as a MacBook Pro, but that's the distinction. It's mobile.
I mean, it's an interesting idea, but I keep coming back to my idea that Apple already has an inexpensive, low-powered, very long battery life computer, and it's called the iPad. And that anytime someone says that we could produce a much longer battery life, much less powerful, but also much less expensive MacBook if we change the CPU, Apple's answer would be, well, here's the iPad Air for you. And the other problem that I would have for that is that if you're trying to run the same software on two different families of CPU, there are going to be so, it seems like there's so many things that the ARM processor will not be able to do that would require an Intel. And as soon as Apple has to put a sticker metaphorically on every page inside the App Store saying that this is not going to work on a MacBook Air, it's only going to work on this thing. And it's because of this one API that this one developer wanted to use that is not necessarily important for a list manager, but he wanted to use it or she wanted to use it. And that's why I'm going to tell you that, no, you can't run this on your $790 ARM-powered MacBook Air.
We make a big deal about all the hires Apple's done towards some sort of watchy kind of a thing. I mean, if people for years have been hiring chip designers, doesn't that kind of incline you to think they want to do more with designing their own chips?
Well, that's exactly the case.
But there it's for the iPad and the iPhone.
Well, if you want to build an iPad, you have to really have a chip that's designed for that iPad. If you want to have a wrist-top machine, you have to have something that's designed for that unique profile of power and power consumption and power projected to the user. So you really want to have people on board who can not just simply take something off the shelf, but simply say, here's what we want the watch to do. Please design us a CPU that can do that. And in a watch that's somewhat less thin than this can of seltzer. You know, that's not a good solution, no matter how good the screen on the top is.
That looks like the Moto 360. It's exactly the same shape. Hey, one thing we should point out with regard to all this. And I forgot, I had a thought and I forgot what it was. We're talking about, hey, look who's here. Now I know why I'm distracted. Mr. Alex Lindsay has just joined us.
Yay.
Sorry for being late.
Not at all.
He just jumped here.
My plane was delayed.
Where'd
in Vancouver.
Come from?
Vancouver.
Vancouver.
Yeah.
It's Canada's fault. Blame Canada. Beautiful.
Yes.
Blame Canada. Intel ARM, we're talking about.
Yes.
And whether there might be. Oh, I know what I wanted to point out. There is one large company that is dealing with this kind of conundrum of making some Intel devices and some ARM devices, both intended to be kind of computers, and that's Microsoft. In fact, they've stopped kind of pushing their ARM-based RT, which was the in-between product, although they did solve the problem of having a store that can sell to both Windows, full Windows, and the Windows RT, the Metro store, most of the apps in there. Like the vast
wasn't a successful.
Yeah, well, that's the question. That's the question.
I mean, like, not to take anything away from Gazi, because I like a lot of his writing, but writing Apple should do something is easy. What Apple does with their prototypes is they ask the repercussions, the hard questions.
Right.
Like, if we put ARM on a MacBook Air, does it run OS 10 or does it run iOS? If it runs iOS, these are the problems. If it runs OS 10, these are the problems. Are any of these better than what we're going to get by going with Broadwell for the next MacBook Air? Because that's going to be hugely power efficient, mega long battery life, really powerful. And if the answer isn't, it gives a significant advantage, then it just stays in the lab biding its time, minding its own business until that answer changes.
Absolutely.
Would you all be shocked if Apple made this announcement the next year that they're going to start making at least some computers with ARMs?
I don't know about shocked. I really think that the only smart reaction to possible Apple products is to be ready for anything, because they will leap out of the bushes with a knife in their teeth and then
God knows
wrestle you to the ground and pummel you with a new idea until you promise to give in and buy it. Nothing is ridiculous, only because anybody outside of Apple doesn't have the ability to see the entire picture. And why does an Apple branded TV make absolutely no sense to me? Well, because I don't work inside of Apple. I don't know what they're planning for 2015 or 2016. I don't know what they think that they can do that an Apple TV can't. So that's why I'm sort of in this position where I have to say that's why not only do I not predict stuff like that, but also when I'm confronted with a rumor like that, I have to make sure I use that weasel language, saying that I don't understand how that would work, instead of saying, oh, that's a stupid idea, and of course Apple would never do it.
That's what I say, and I've been bit many times. I said, Apple, oh, they'll never go Intel. I said, they'll never buy Beats. I can go on and on. You're right. You be smart. Don't predict, because Apple is unpredictable, aren't they? We've learned, if nothing else, we've learned that. You know what? This is National Make-A-Will Month. We're going to let Alex get settled in and take a little bit of a break, talk about LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom is not a law firm. They provide self-help services at your specific direction. They were developed, it was developed by some of the best legal minds in the country. In fact, they've been doing this. It's been their passion for over 13 years. And we talk a lot about the business value of LegalZoom, starting your own business, incorporating LLC, trademark, that kind of thing. But it started, I think, really helping people make their wills. And it's such an important thing. This is National Make-A-Will Month. So LegalZoom's offering special pricing on wills and living trusts. You got to protect your family. If you don't want the courts deciding what happens to your property or your kids, you better say what you want. And it's not hard. You don't have to go to a lawyer and spend a lot of time and money in a law office saying, this is what I need, and going back and forth. Just a few simple steps at LegalZoom.com take you less than 15 minutes and cost you a surprisingly low amount of money. So there's really no reason not to do it. No time, as little as, what is the will? Show me the will cost. $69? Well, we could take a little bit off of that. In fact, if you go to LegalZoom.com right now and use the offer code MBW, you'll save on your last will or your living trust, which is also, I'm about to set one of those up. Also a very good thing to do. Enter the offer code MBW at checkout, LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom was developed by top attorneys to provide self-help services at your specific direction. That's why I like it. But they're not a law firm. Legal help is furnished through vetted independent attorneys. So if you have questions, you can't go to the LegalZoom legal plan attorneys. But it's not a law firm. It's actually something a lot better. We thank LegalZoom for their support of Mac Break Weekly. I was playing chess with somebody from Zimbabwe the other day.
Really?
Yeah, and I was trying to remember all those Zimbabwean words you'd
talk. Mereru, yeah. Or Magwanani.
You know, it's weird. I play chess online, and I was in a tournament with a Russian, a Spaniard, and a Zimbabwean.
Wow.
And I couldn't talk to any of them.
It's like the Highlander of chess.
It was fun. I beat them all, by the way. I'm not saying anything, but...
There can be only one.
There can be only one.
Fortunately, the phrase horsey guy is international.
That's one of the... I started playing chess when I was a teenager in high school, and it's one of the great things about chess is there's no language involved, so you play people all over the world. You may not be able to speak a word, but you speak over the board.
Are you playing really in real time, or are you playing like this in the background?
It's like postal chess. You have, I think you have 48 hours to make a move.
Right.
Chess.com, I highly recommend it. It's really
international
fun.
Language of chess.
Yeah. And you never know, because chess.com is on the internet, you really, it's funny, I rarely get Americans. I get people from all over the world.
Right. It's interesting.
Fun. Let's see. Daring Fireball. John Gruber. Mixing it up. is he getting more snarky, or has he always been this snarky?
This was such a bad press cycle.
Yeah, but you know, you can't say John is not culpable here. He responds to The Verge's article about the Moto 360, the smartwatch which will have wireless charging, with these words. This was on Friday. It looks like Motorola's designers tried to draw as much attention as they could to the 360's stupid flat tire display shape. The only way this could get funnier is if it doesn't even ship until after Apple announces their wrist wearable thing next month, period, full stop. He drove a lot of traffic. Yep. Then he tweets, "Oh, I was just kidding. I don't know."
I can't believe people link to that, though. I mean,
what do you mean? It's John Gruber. I mean, this guy has had very credible ins at Apple for a long time.
He usually little birdies or does something to draw attention to when he's not joking or actually making a leak statement.
He said next month. You think that was an accident?
That's not how I should say that I don't read his blog only because he's on a list of other commentators where if I read something that someone's posted on iMore and it mirrors what I'm editing right now in front of me, I think, well, okay, now I can't publish this because really someone else said that today and it'll look like I'm copying. But I did read that and it read it as just, I don't know, bar chit chat. I didn't believe he was breaking anything. Also, in the past, he's not. He telegraphs things, and also he's more content to simply link to somebody else who has said, like the great bearded one. When the great bearded one says "yup" to something, Gruber will link to it, and that is his way of saying that I think that this is correct, whether or not I know for a fact or not. I have great stock in what this thing is saying. Historically, he's just never blabbed about, hey, I have specific information about Apple's plans for September, because that's the easiest way to make sure that whoever it is told you that is not going to tell you anything ever again.
Because they might not be there anymore.
They might not be there anymore. And
might not be there anymore.
Hey, are you my Uber car? Yes. You ordered white panel van with no markings and mud on plates. No, it said it was a black gas. Let's get into the van now. We're going to give you a treatment we call the infinite loop. You'll pray for it to end, but there's just another bend.
All right. So this horrified you. The news cycle horrified you, Renee, because people took it too seriously.
Well, I mean, they blogged, and I've seen, like, previous years, they would blog things that he said in his podcast. And I'm sure that, you know, that happens to other people, too. And John Gruber absolutely is an attention magnet and has a history of correctly predicting certain things that Apple would do. But this was just wacky, and some of the news outlets will not link to news items that are news items that says we believe Apple's going to do this. They'll say no, that's a little bit sketchy for us. We're not going to link to that. But oh, Gruber as an aside and a joke when he's being incredibly mean to Motorola, let's put that on the front page. Go.
Okay.
Do we think something's going to happen this fall? I think we're going to see it
happen in September, right?
I don't know about September, but I think this fall.
Why would they? Take a spotlight away from an iPhone. Right. They wouldn't.
All signs point to October.
And that would be the normal, the anomaly, the iPad announcement. And there's not much to say about a new iPad.
The iPads will have Touch ID, which is not going to be a headline.
Right.
I just keep, there's the consistent messaging of brand new product categories in 2014. And that's the only reason why I'm sure we'll see something like that by the end of the year.
I'm just going to be contrary and say I don't think we're going to see an iWatch this year.
contrarian.
Well, you say that, you ensure that we do, Leo.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
No, I'm always wrong.
Leo has guaranteed it now by saying it will never happen.
I'm always wrong.
Just buy a Mac Mini. We'll all be happy.
I don't feel it, man.
I was about to say, how many watches does Leo have to buy to ensure that Apple will definitely come out with it?
I buy them all, man. I can't wait till the Moto 360 comes out. I'm very excited about that.
The Moto 320.
Yeah, and really, and I'm not directing this at what Gruber said in that post. Although it was a fun read about this. He makes his feelings about Motorola very, very plain. But you know, sometimes some of us really don't look good for ourselves when there's who was it who had that piece about how I've got this explosive expose where Motorola says it's around, they have a round display technology, but there's actually a little part of it at the very, very bottom that has the display tip that's not round, like, yeah, but it's a tiny, it's not round, like, okay, whatever.
It's got a button.
Motorola,
I can't unsee it, Andy. I can't unsee it. It's like a splinter in my mind.
It's like maybe look at the fact that it's round except for one tiny sliver. Maybe ignore the fact there's a logo on the front of this phone, and maybe actually charge it up and look at it before you decide it's a piece of crap because it has a logo on the front of it.
That'll be confirmed.
We're sometimes not very charming as a species, aren't we, Apple fans? That's all I'm saying.
We're a specious species.
We're why we don't get invited to the cool graduation party. We have to just go candlepin bowling, then go to El Torito with our three friends.
Because avoid the planet.
Everyone else is sick of hearing us.
Well, I have to point out that Apple has made yet another fashion-forward hire. Yves Saint Laurent's Europe president and retail head, Catherine Monnier, has left YSL, started at Apple in the last couple of weeks. This according to Mark Gurman and 9 to 5 Mac. She was brought in by former YSL CEO Paul Deneuve, who joined Apple last year, to work on, quote, special projects. Now, her expertise is textiles, so that's interesting.
I think retail, too. She was also head of their retail.
Yes, at retail, but if you look at her, like her LinkedIn...
Part of me wonders, you know, a lot of times when most of us have gone to Apple's HQ, you know, one of the things that you kind of feel like you need to do is go into the Apple store there, mm-hmm. just next to the entrance, yeah. And buy mm-hmm. Apple
company
stuff.
Store.
And sometimes you wonder if they're going to expand. When I see all these purchases or all these hires, you wonder whether they're going to expand making some of those some of that clothing line more widely available. Like right now, they're just ordering stuff.
Sensors in clothing instead of, right. You know, maybe there's a little misdirection here. We've all been thinking watch. Maybe it's really the eye shirt.
It's a cummerbund.
I wear a Bluetooth fez now. Bluetooth fezes are cool.
Hasn't Jason Snell been saying the eye hat for a long time? And maybe he's right.
Well, Jason knows fezes are cool.
Fezes are cool. How about headbands? Are they back?
I still think Apple should buy Blue Bottle and put one in every flagship store.
Blue Bottle coffee?
Yeah.
Do they have Blue Bottle coffee in Montreal?
No, I get it when I do.
Bleu Bottle. You have better coffee, I'm sure, don't you?
No.
What's the... No?
No, not in Montreal.
In the land of smoked meat?
Yeah, we have good smoked meat and poutine, but no good coffee.
Oh, that's sad.
We have Cafe Myriad, but that's downtown.
How could you not have good coffee?
Not in my area.
Oh.
I think in Canada, coffee is merely regarded as a heat delivery system. The flavor is just incidental.
You're right. We have our priorities. Did you read the New York Times article? I thought this was great about Apple's university, which we've kind of known about. I mean, this is not really new, but I think very intriguing, this idea of trying to preserve the DNA of Steve Jobs and Apple's design focus by having a university which employees can sign up for. In fact, new employees are strongly encouraged to sign up for. They have classes, for instance, for CEOs from startups that Apple's purchased on how to incorporate into the Apple culture. Apparently, it's very secretive. It was mentioned in the Jobs biography, the Walter Isaacson Jobs biography. The Times says employees are discouraged from talking about the company in general, and classes are no exception, but they were able to get three people who knew about it to talk off the record, but at least anonymously. They mention one course in which they use Picasso's famous bull lithographs to demonstrate how you can take a complex thing and make it simple. Picasso starts with a sketch of a bull and gets it down to just a line that's clearly still a bull, and then they compare it to the mouse.
But is that a great example? Because the mouses on the left two are really great and easy to use. The mouses on the right
not so
are
easy.
So minimalist.
I know, that it's horrible.
More minimalistic and less useful.
One of the three employees says even the toilet paper in the bathrooms for Apple University is really nice.
What they really need is what most of us have done with those mice, which is you start on the left there and you slowly move to the right. But there's a fifth one, which is a Logitech mouse.
Yeah, the Microsoft mouse.
We're done next with Apple's experiments.
Apple actually does have the perfect mouse. It's actually depicted there on the extreme right. That's where the customer just gives them $75 and Apple says, okay, you don't need a mouse because you've got to get a trackpad. Thank you. Come again.
Goodbye. It's a better mouse. The program was started in 2008 by Joe Podolny, who was dean of the Yale School of Management. They have professors from all over, some of the best universities in America, Yale, Harvard, UC Berkeley, Stanford, MIT. Some of them continue to work at the universities while teaching for Apple. Others have moved over, like Podolny, to Apple full-time. The company, the Times speculates, may even offer a course specifically for Beats employees. I can see Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine in the front row taking notes.
The back row.
Throwing spitballs.
The war is over. You may wait out the rest of the technology competition in comfort and confinement. So long as you do not try to escape, we will all have...
That would be funny.
It's an interesting problem that they have to solve because, you know, Apple takes this culture very seriously, and Apple is a Steve Jobs product like the iPad or the iPhone. And when you have a group of people and one or two new people join, it's very easy to pass on that culture. But when you start ramping up and you start scaling up the way Apple is, and suddenly you have 20 new people joining, that same sort of internship process doesn't really work anymore. And you have to figure out a way of passing on those case studies, those core values in a much larger way. And that tends to turn into more of a lecture university sort of environment.
It does sound in a way, though, like cult induction. In one of the courses, what makes Apple, Apple, the professor shows a slide of the remote control for Google TV, which has 78 buttons, and then shows the Apple TV remote, which has three.
But again,
you know, we've complained about it.
But here's the problem. What I use with my Apple TV is my iPhone.
There you go. Wow, that's fast.
There you go.
Did you do that, Chad?
Yeah, thanks for the Creative Cloud subscription.
Now it's all worth it. All worth it. Chad has to have Photoshop.
The opposite of that is a corporate culture where you have a bunch of different people working in different directions, becoming feudal. You know, that hasn't worked well, you know, at other companies.
No, we've seen other companies. Although I would guess any major corporation has something like this, kind of
Hamburger
to indoctrinate.
Well, and I think a lot of corporations think about that when they think about mergers.
How do you do it?
I mean, I think that was a lot of the Time Warner AOL problem was just a lot of it was a huge culture clash.
That's right.
I mean, there's a lot of problems with that merger, but that was a specific one.
There's another course called The Best Things, which takes its name from a quote, quote. The purpose, according to the Times, to remind employees to surround themselves with the best things, talented peers and high-quality materials, so they can do their best work.
Buy the Breyers ice cream. Don't go for the store brand.
That's right. No more of this seal test.
Actually, I heard Breyers has gone downhill. So.
It's not
Häagen-Dazs, there you go.
In the biography, Isaacson talks about Steve Jobs literally agonizing for weeks over what washing machine to buy and having family meetings and trying to decide.
Having empty rooms rather than filling them with furniture that wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
So imagine how much prep your kids and your kids have to do for the go. Okay, I got 10 minutes with Steve about the washing machine on Tuesday.
I have a keynote presentation.
Well, Steve, I don't think I'm full of crap. Here's this graph of agitation systems that indicates
they
make them more beautiful.
Actually, I should get my book.
What did they choose?
Everyone wants to know the brand, and I want to know. But he chose one that takes a very, very long time to wash the clothes.
Mm.
They come out cleaner and softer.
Oh.
Time is not the important.
I wonder if Steve Jobs calls your company and says, "I'm thinking about getting a new washer and dryer. Can you send one over for me to test?"
Guarantee
I bet
you
there's like a long line.
Guarantee
you know, there's
you.
Probably like eight of
Guarantee
them
you.
In some room over there, and some and some guy with little glasses. And we've looked at these. And
actually, somebody has put the link in the chat room to the quote. Actually, this is from a Wired piece in 1996. He told Gary Isaac Wolf of Wired, "We didn't have a very good washer, so we spent a little time looking at them. It turns out the Americans make washers and dryers all wrong. The Europeans make them better." I bet he bought a Miele. "But they take twice as long, or a Bosch, to do the clothes. It turns out that they wash them with about a quarter as much water, and your clothes end up with a lot less detergent on them. Most importantly, they don't trash your clothes. They use a lot less soap, a lot less water, but they come out cleaner, softer, and they last longer. We spent some time in our family talking about what's the trade-off we want to make. We end up, this is Jobs. We ended up talking a lot about design, but also about the values of our family. Did we care most about getting our wash done in an hour versus an hour and a half? Or did we care most about our clothes feeling really soft and lasting longer? Did we care about using a quarter of the water? We spent about 2 weeks talking about this every night at the dinner table."
That's how you hear what product meetings at Apple were like. You know, people were yeah. terrified of going in there. And
he did get a Miele. He got a Miele, according to Wired.
It is a peek into like the family dynamic where if you borrow the you're allowed to use the family car, right, you put a dent in the right panel, you know that, okay, I have to tell Dad, I was using the knob on my wash machine and the labeling is a little bit confusing. I said, could you explain it to me? I know if he gets diverted for 2 weeks now, 2 weeks on trying to figure out the best wash machine, that's enough time to do
Donnie,
the risky business
Steve.
Thing
Wake
and get the car fixed.
By the way, that Miele washer, $2,000.
But softer and cleaner, Leo. What price yes. is that?
And there are only five left in stock, so you better hurry.
Back now.
I've actually been looking at washers and dryers because my parents, they don't listen to this show, so I can talk about it. I'm getting them a washer and dryer.
Reviews,
I'm not,
by
it's
the
not
way,
even for.
Look how terrible the reviews are.
Big bucks for a piece of junk.
8 5-star, 14 1-star. I paid big bucks for a piece of junk, said one reviewer. Obviously, Steve did not read
Apple
Amazon reviews.
No. Apple is doomed.
Assumed.
I'm not actually sure if this is the exact brand or model that he bought, but
it was just the brand.
It was the first result when
I
searched.
Have like
it
a Miele showroom down on Petaluma Boulevard South.
We have a Miele store in town.
Yeah,
nice.
I've never actually gone in.
Yeah.
I bet that machine does a great job on blue jeans and black turtlenecks. It's only when you have colors
yeah, exactly.
and shorts.
I think that's all he did was just wash blue jeans and black turtlenecks
over and over.
In all of the washers and just. Like, what happens if we do 30 washes with a black turtleneck? Will it fade? That's really the important thing. Did you? Now, if you guys, I don't know. Is it true that the story about the turtlenecks? Have you guys heard the story about the turtlenecks?
The Japanese uniform.
That he found the perfect turtleneck that he wanted, and it had been that he really wanted to have this specific turtleneck, and they had stopped making it. And he asked them how many would it take for them to make more. And they said, oh, you'd have to do a run of like 10,000. And he said, okay.
Oh, that was
something like that.
My favorite story about Charles Schulz, where they found he had this one steel pen nib that he absolutely loved, and they stopped making them. And he, for fear that he would run out, he just simply said, I don't care how many you still have in the warehouse. I want to buy all of them. And so he wound up with millions and millions of nibs. And every time he got a new editor, he would break this new editor in by inviting them over to the studio and saying that, yeah, well, you know, I don't know. It's just I've been doing this for now 28 years, 30 years. And I think that maybe when I run out of nibs, I'll just retire. And then they get panicked. Dilly smiles, takes them to the garage and shows them cartons and cartons and cartons of every. If you have the one thing you love that's perfect and you have the ability to simply realize that I will never have to shop for this item ever, ever again. I have shoes that are like that. I have a jacket that's like that. That if I could buy now 9 of these jackets so that I will never have to ever solve the problem of where do I find a nice black blazer that I like? And if I had that money, I would buy 10,000 of these and then, you know, Goodwill would have every person who's out of luck on a job interview would be in the same black blazer. It would look like a cult, which might be actually the ultimate goal.
Apparently, the Saint Croix mock turtleneck in black is $175. So if you ordered 10,000 of them,
I bet you
do you get a break?
You get a volume discount.
I bet you it's got a really high thread count.
They make it up in volume.
The story always was that even the T-shirts in the Apple store were chosen personally by Steve.
Well, you know, a lot of times for a long time, we bought all of our, like when we got stuff with Pixelcore logos on it, we would just go to the Apple store and we'd buy a bunch of their shirts. And then we'd look at the label and then we'd buy that.
Whatever.
I'm not going to bother doing the research. Apple did that for me. Yeah, exactly.
This is the cotton and microfiber classic long sleeve mock turtleneck in black that Steve wore. And apparently sales went through the roof when Steve passed away. This became very, very popular.
You can't really go out in public dressed like that because you'd get called on it immediately.
Yeah, and Levi's 501 stonewashed denim jeans, right?
I think it was, yeah.
You know what? I'm going to buy a bunch of them. I'm tired of this button-down look of mine.
I had to replace a pair of sneakers. I did buy his New Balance 920 shoes.
Sorry.
And yeah. All right. They're great. They're not terribly expensive. They're comfortable. Yeah. They look okay.
These are $200 now. These t-shirts are turtlenecks have gone up. They're now $200.
I don't want a mock turtleneck, but I would love one. Do they make ones that are just regular turtlenecks?
You don't want a regular.
Do you know who used to make great?
I'm telling you, I used to wear turtlenecks. The rollover ones, they choke you.
You're not rolling it right.
You're rolling it wrong.
You're not rolling it right.
I'm rolling it wrong. I think Steve wore mocks because he didn't want to deal with that.
Right, right, yeah. I just like the structure.
He painted the back of the collar.
You're not rolling it right. Holy cow.
Got to do a double fold.
That's not the first time that sentence has been said inside the Bay Area.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I was waiting for that. I threw a softball and no one swung. I just tossed it over there. Like it wasn't going faster than 60 miles an hour. It was like right over the middle.
You're rolling it wrong, man.
There you go. It's like the home run derby of the All-Star game. Just
I'm playing T-ball over here.
Out of the park. Apple suppliers apparently, I'm talking Renee and Andy and Alex here. I don't want to say anything, but according to some, Bloomberg says Apple suppliers have started making new iPads.
Better hurry up. They're going to have them out for October.
Yeah, if they're going to announce them in October, you'd start now, right? 2 months?
Yeah.
Mass production of a full-sized iPad with a 9.7-inch screen is already underway, says Bloomberg, with an unveiling projected for the end of this quarter early next, said two of the people who asked not to be identified because the details aren't public. A new version of this.
Break it on Twitter right now. There's going to be an iPhone 6S next year, Leo, and an iPhone 7 after that.
Wow,
Apple's
amazing.
Apple's going to keep making these devices. They're not going out of business or switching to hot tubs.
Hey, will they do... So September 9th, we talked about it last week. You concur. You predicted this in the spring. Yeah. We think 10 days later, a week from the following Friday, they'll have it. Will they have two phones, a 4.7-inch and a 5.5-inch, do you think?
I mean, I've heard they're working on them, but we haven't seen the same leaks and the same parts and everything else. So, I mean, I don't know if it's going to follow later, if they're going to announce it and release it later, if they're going to announce it next year. That's the advantage of Apple not pre-announcing stuff, right? Is they're beholden to nobody. If a product is ready, we saw last year how hard it was for them to get the iPad mini to market by Christmas. They had to do that strange release in the middle of the night that nobody knew about. And I think they're going to try to avoid that if they can in the future. So people are expecting an iPhone, whatever they have ready, they'll announce there. And if something's not ready, it's easy for them to either show it off like the Mac Pro at WWDC or even, you know, wait and hold it until it is ready.
I kind of would have, this is around the time where I start to think if they were going to have a much larger screen iPhone in October or November, this is around the time where you really expect to start to see some sort of parts show up or some sort of substantive rumor that you can certainly dismiss and choose not to believe, but which has a little bit of protein in there.
And we've seen a ton for the 4.7, but none for the 5.5, right?
Yeah. Either we're seeing
one of the tightest products they've ever developed, or maybe it's not necessarily being fast-tracked for a certain date.
Yeah, to Andy's point, I mean, when Apple has updates of products, we see leaks all the time. When they have new products, like the original iPhone didn't leak, the original iPad didn't leak, until maybe the night before. If this is something different, if this is not just an iPhone, if this is an iFablet or whatever they call it, it has a different screen resolution and requires something different from developers, it could be something that's shown but isn't released till later. You know, the original Apple television was shown off in the fall and then announced again at Macworld 3 months later. So there's precedent for that.
Yeah.
So if it's something really different, we could hear about it and not see it.
For various reasons, there's a time in the development cycle where there's no way they can keep a lid on it, and so they want to control that first release.
So it's conceivable that they have a 5.5, and they've really kept a lid on it, whereas the 4.7 they didn't.
Well, the 4.7 sounds like it's shipping 10 days later, and that may not be the case with the 5.5.
Ah.
Well, I think
I have
from
a
5.5.
This is an Android phone, obviously. I like 5.5 inches. If the bezels aren't too big, it's not a huge phone.
The 1520, yeah. Is that 6?
That's 6. That's huge. Yeah. That actually is huge.
It's as big as my head.
There you go. This is the 1520. So versus the original iPad, the iPhone. So,
yeah. It feels pretty big. I do like the 1520. I love it.
By empirical testing, exactly 1.5 Pop-Tarts in size.
Yeah. 5.5, though. This is 5.5. It's not... When I compare with I have the 1520 in the other room. I mean, I like this size. That's not a bad size. I would be really happy.
I'm still torn. You know, I have a larger. I have the HTC, the M8.
Yeah, that's 5 even, right?
I think it's 5 even there. And I'm still torn with whether I liked. I just feel like
that's too big. Huh?
I feel like, I mean, I don't know. I'll probably get the larger one to try it, but I find myself feeling like the HTC is a little too big for me.
The HTC is also bigger because it has on the front speaker, so it makes it unusually tall.
Yeah, and then
a 5 does not have to be quite that big. It's bigger than
like
it would
the Galaxy and one of the geniuses of the HTC One is that they put the lens on the most convex part of the phone, except for the edges, which means that you're guaranteed to scratch it.
So I think they want the Z index, right?
What are these guys thinking? It's great. It's cool. It's cool. It's a cool phone, but it's just like
I haven't scratched mine, but I do smudge it a lot.
Yeah, because it's on this.
It's right there.
They curved away from it. Let's put it right out on the edge.
Yeah,
it's just to me, there's not that much of a size difference between these two, mm-hmm. and that might make someone say that. Well, then why bother even making it bigger at all? For me, though, it's like, well, if I can make it a little bit bigger, which means that when I'm showing people pictures, when I'm trying to look at movies and stuff like that, there really is an impressive size difference when you're looking at photos, graphics, and videos on this versus the smaller phone.
That you're showing a 4.7-inch compared to the iPhone.
Right, this is 4.7. This is the Moto X.
I think 4.7 is a size that you could put out and nobody would go, oh, that's too big.
Mm-hmm. I have big manly hands. This is a comfortable size for me to swipe my entire thumb across. But if I were somewhat smaller, then I would certainly see the advantages of having a narrower screen. But it's going to be interesting to see what the entire lineup looks like, if it's a replacement or whether they simply say that we're going to have the narrow one for people who like something that's smaller, but we're going to give you now larger size options. Now we're going to think of the iPad as a spectrum of devices as opposed to just big and small.
Yep. Apple, of course, has talked about their new health kit technology that'll be in iOS 8 and the new health app. According to Reuters, Christina Farr writing for Reuters, Apple is preparing a health kit rollout amid tangled regulatory web. They're talking with Mount Sinai, the Cleveland Clinic, and Johns Hopkins, as well as with Allscripts, a competitor to electronic health records provider Epic Systems. I don't know why she mentions that, but the problem is, and this is why they were having talks with the FDA, and Dr. Mom tells me this, you have to be very careful about making health recommendations in something like this. It's one thing to store the information. As long as you secure it, you're okay. But it seems that Apple would like to make health recommendations. The Mayo Clinic is also involved. They're apparently testing a service to flag patients when results from apps and devices are abnormal with follow-up information and treatment recommendations. That would require FDA approval.
Right. But I think part of this is, you know, you don't oftentimes when you're trying to do something revolutionary, you're not going to do what's easy. You're going to do it specifically because it's hard. And Apple's one of the few companies that can expend the money and the time and the process and have enough control over the system to actually, you know, implement this effectively. And I think that you know, it seems like almost an unclimbable cliff. but if they get over it effectively, it does give them a lot of inroads.
I'm gratified. My healthcare provider is Kaiser Permanente, which is, I think, West Coast only, right? They apparently are working, or Kaiser Permanente's Brian Gardner, who leads a research and development group responsible for their mobile offering, said many physicians are thinking about how to leverage patient-generated data from apps and devices. I know my doctor would love to get blood pressure readings from me every day or...
The big issue you get into with that sample rate is and this is where I think also this problem jumps up is, do you want all that data in your medical record? You know, especially as insurance companies are looking at it now. That's in some ways less important.
Can you control it?
Right. And some of that becomes less important under Obamacare in some ways, because you're not going to have as many people be getting turned down for their health position, but they definitely can get charge more. That's really the challenge there, and so I think that's one of the problems with a lot of these is how do you protect all that data.
Apparently there is an optional toggle in HealthKit or the health app that will let patients decide if they wish to share data from third-party apps with Apple's main health app. If you choose to store sensitive health data in iCloud, it's encrypted in transit and at rest, according to one Apple employee. Yeah, they need to address all of this stuff, obviously. And that's the tangled web. There's a lot of regulations. Not to mention, there are a lot of existing systems, none of which interoperate. And there has been a mandate from the administration to move to electronic health records. And you could see kind of a utopian vision where these records are portable. You carry it on your phone. Your doctor can send you stuff. You send data to the doctor. You're being measured all the time.
Well, it's your doctor, it's your fitness consultant,
right.
All trainer. Of those things. You're having your trainer be able to have that kind of information and know what your heart rate was and what your blood pressure was while you were working out, and all those other things are useful. I mean, that's what, when you go to these really high-end, like athletes' performance down in where they're really doing the high performance athletes, I mean, they're managing everything, and that's becoming something that you don't need a big... You need the trainers and the equipment that they have down there, but you don't need to have a person pulling all that in.
Right.
All that stuff's going to be pretty available.
We're talking about Mac, Apple, iPad, iOS, Yosemite. We haven't talked about Yosemite yet. We'll talk a little more about it, Yosemite, and lots more with our guest, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, from the Pixel Core, Alex Lindsay. He's in studio. Yay. He's got many new stickers on his laptop as he's
traveling.
Mine's
pulling apart. Look at it.
They're holding it together, actually.
I got this one at the Geek House.
You went down to a Cali Lewis's launch.
Very impressive, I have to say.
More than this?
What? No, it's different. It's just different. It's not
cool.
The same. It's very cool. They've definitely learned a lot from this, and then they've definitely
learned a couple
of things.
So we're going to have to keep up with the Lewis's now? We're going to have to upgrade our...
I think it's two different worlds. Okay. I think that it's much more post-driven, less live-driven, but I think that it was really cool. I saw $30,000 speakers that were really...
Those KEF speakers, yeah. They don't get to keep those, do they?
I don't know, but they're really nice.
Yeah.
I got to say, that I was like, how good could $30,000 speakers... sound? It turns out they could sound really good.
At first, I thought we would have nice speakers in here, and then I realized you don't really want nice speakers, because when are you going to listen to it except when you're off the air? So,
no, I need if I got those, I would get a room for those.
Put them in the house.
A little room in a nice
studio.
In a very quiet,
you need
comfortable chair.
A mixing room.
You could spend limitless money on audio, couldn't you? Like just millions
Easy.
And millions.
Easy.
Yes.
Easy. Our show, and of course, Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times, who's here with people in fezes. Showing their sartorial excellence. Who are they and why are they wearing fezes?
They were standing outside at Boston Comic Con last weekend, and I was walking past, and they were just hanging out, and I realized, wow, they look like a really cool band whose CD I would buy if it was a line of fezes.
Are we not men? We are Doctor Who fans.
I can't decide whether they're more disturbing or less disturbing than the girl with the gun.
Yeah, what was that?
That was also Comic-Con? Also Boston Comic Con. Yeah, it's taken me 3 or 4 days, but I'm now only 6 photos short of posting 100 pictures from the con to my Flickr account. And so, yeah, it's this one. She is actually dressed as Rocket Raccoon from the Guardians of the Galaxy. So she's got the teeth. She's got the gun. And when she turned around, she was actually wearing a tail as well. So.
I got to show you Groot, the Patrick Delahanty Groot, dancing Groot that he designed.
We are Groot, Leo.
We are all Groot. Is Patrick here today? I guess not. That would be fun to show that off.
He is.
Is he? Is he hiding? Groot's not here. Groot's not here, man. Where did you send Groot? Groot's back home. Well, tune in the iPad today. I think we did a little demo of the dancing Groot on iPad today for this week. It was very cool. He took one of those dancing daisies, and Svetlana, his fiance, did a Groot head, and he did a Groot body, and you plug in, you know, something like, oh, I don't know, the Jackson 5, I Want You Back, and it dances. It's awesome.
Trinity Caldwell from Macworld has one of those on her desk. She's been Instagramming it.
Is it a Groot?
So jealous. She has a Groot minifig, like one of the big, super deformed, bobble-headed. So cute.
I am Groot. Our show today brought to you by Shutterstock. Love Shutterstock. They're now up to 40 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, another million or so video clips. It is a way to go to get the perfect image or video for your next creative project. You know, I saw the Guardians of the Galaxy, and with any Marvel movie, you always stay to the end because there's always a little something at the end.
Right.
And I'm watching the credits. That's how they get you to watch Shutterstock. Mm-hmm. That's kind of amazing that a major Hollywood motion picture would use, I presume, video clips from Shutterstock as part of their production process. But that's why you want to use Shutterstock. Great stuff. Most of the contributors are professional photographers or artists. They, of course, review every image for content and quality. And somehow they get a quarter million new images up every week. Now, all of this would be meaningless unless you had a brilliant search tool, and you do at Shutterstock.com. You can choose individual image packs or monthly subscriptions for the best deal. Do you think they don't have any Groot? You're going to tree people. Yeah, that's the generic Groot, and there they are. Happy tree people.
Oh, look at the happy trees.
Happy tree people.
Yeah, ants, not Groot.
We're together with a tree.
You will find so much great stuff at Shutterstock. And by the way, that search is modifiable. You can give them nouns, but also adjectives. You can drill down by subject, by color, by palette. So you could choose your color palette for your website, for instance. File type, of course, but also things like how many people are in it, what gender the people are, the emotions they're feeling. And then if you have a Shutterstock account, which is free to create, you do not need to give them a credit card, just sign up. You could save those images to they call them light boxes, the light box gallery, so that you can access them anytime, share them with other team members. An incredible iPad app that is just gorgeous and full of inspiration. They won a Webby Award for it. And, of course, it's an international company, so they have multilingual customer support, more than a dozen countries full-time throughout the week. We love Shutterstock. You want to try it? We got a special deal for you. Start the account. No credit card needed. Begin using Shutterstock to brainstorm, to inspire. Save your favorite images to a lightbox. And when you decide to buy, you will get 20% off any image file. But you have to use our special offer code, MacBreak814. So pick your image. Take 20% off using the offer code MacBreak814. Shutterstock.com. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. We have the 25 image a day plan, which is very, very handy for our blogging and so forth. Microsoft going after Apple. You know, Apple used to go after, I'm a Mac, I'm a PC. Microsoft lately for its Surface Pro 3 has been doing a lot of anti-Mac ads. Here's an example.
I don't understand why they haven't made
Mac
Touch.
I'm still playing Groot, so I was trying to get that lined up so the audio would have been all weird. Go ahead.
You ready?
Yes.
Here is...
Wait, are you running full Adobe Photoshop on a tablet?
Yep. But it's not just a tablet. It's really a laptop. It's a Surface Pro 3 with a touchscreen.
Well, it can't be as fast as my Mac.
Sure it can. And it is.
But you probably can't plug anything into it.
I have a USB, mini display port, plug away. And this is my favorite. It's the kickstand.
So you're saying it does more than my Mac?
Well, technically, you said it.
I am not particularly convinced by that ad.
That was pretty weak. That wasn't as good as the Samsung ads that usually say there have been a lot of other ads, like the Nokia phone commercials with their own voice assistant, and Samsung has done ads that are really actually cut a little bit deep into the skin. And this one is, yeah, I don't need a kickstand because I have a hinge attached to a full featured keyboard.
Yeah, it's like okay. Here's another one. Let's see if this is more convincing.
So
I feel bad
for that.
It's my Surface Pro 3. It's a tablet and a laptop.
But it couldn't have the power of my Mac. This is an Intel Core i5.
This does too. It runs Office, full Adobe Photoshop, and it's got a touchscreen.
Well, I have a touchscreen too.
Hmm.
Well, this is my favorite thing. I can write with a pen.
Well, so can I. Wow. I've got a lot of stuff to carry.
You are more powerful than you think.
So that one a little closer to home. There is no, and probably never will be, a Mac touch screen, right?
The problem with these ads, though, is that you have to want Windows to want these products. And the people who use the Mac are you're trying to convince them to give up OS X, not to give up a specific MacBook Air in order to go with the Surface.
The Windows market is so big, I think that you mostly just have to stem the bleeding. Like, I don't think you need to, you don't need to persuade Mac people to come back to you. I think you just keep people who already have Windows to just stick with Windows, and that's a massive market.
So that's what I think they're actually doing, because their OEM partnership agreements won't let them go after Dell or HP or Asus or any of the other Lenovos. But by doing this commercial, they could have people who are thinking about leaving PC for a Mac, or maybe just people who don't like their current PC go to Microsoft without offending anybody.
Microsoft said that Microsoft might be losing as much as $1.7 billion on its Surface line. I mean, this has
not been successful.
Not been a hit.
Not even close.
Yeah.
But what I think when I see an ad like that, it's not so much they want to take market share away from the Mac, so much as they want to identify the Surface as something that is slick and as cool and as stylish as anything that Apple comes out with.
Hard to do that. It's so clunky.
Well, if you see, I don't know. If you actually use one, I confess that this is an instance in which I have this unusual advantage of being able to try something without plunking down $1,000 for it. But once you have a full-featured PC tablet that actually works rather nice and it is really good for the things that it does, you realize that there are times when I really don't want to have to sit like with my knees together and like tap, 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 tap like this. There are times when I really do want to have like a big remote control or a big media slab or a big this, that, or the other. I'm not sure that I would want that it's such an advantage that I would want to have this instead of a laptop style device that can really earn its money back for me. But if Microsoft can start to say that Surface is that cool thing that you have heard about that you want, that's going to be a way for at least Microsoft to position themselves a little bit better than they are right now, which is, you know, the computer you hate to use every single day that the office that your company gives you in your cubicle, maybe you can like it. Hey, look, it comes in red now.
What should Apple do, a OS X touch tablet?
Oh, I mean, OS X isn't touch optimized, and it's the same thing where Apple won't do 15 frames per second video. They won't do an OS X computer until the OS X interface is a phenomenal touch experience. But it is interesting that, you know, Microsoft does believe there's something in between the tablet and the laptop, sort of like the phablet is in between the phone and the tablet. And the question is there really something missing there, or is that a segment the market has decided that they don't need? And I keep going back to, you know, Microsoft does all these product placements, and I watch Hawaii 5.0, and I remember when, you know, 1 week they had iPads, and they just got out of their car and started using them. And a couple of weeks later, they had the Surface, and they got out of the car, and the suspect is running away, and they put the keyboard down on the hood, and they clicked the thing in, and they turned it on, and they swiped it open, and the guy was halfway down the street. And it showed how successful
that's reverse product placement.
Well, but it shows how successful the iPad was at disintermediating the traditional computer overhead, and they were not wise to go against this. So maybe they feel like going against the traditional computer is a better game plan, but it seems like they're applying the same sort of strategy to this, and I don't think it'll be any more successful.
But maybe it could be a very long game that they're playing, because we've talked about this before in the show, where we have generations of people for whom their first experience with a computer was not with a mouse or a keyboard. It really was with a touch device, and wondering what happens when these people start making buying decisions, when they are in their late teens, when they need to buy a computer for college, when they are the generation that is now putting in a request at their business on what kind of computer that they want to be able to use. And it's... The iPad plus a MacBook, I think, is way better than Surface. However, you look at these two things, and I can't help but ask myself, why should somebody have two devices this powerful and this expensive? And that's what makes me not want to call the Surface a silly idea. Not that anybody has called that to here today, but that's when I start to think. I really wonder if I think that. Two devices is just as clumsy as Surface is in its current form, and that I'd be very surprised if 5 years from now someone hasn't tried to really solve that problem and simply say, if you're going to, we will take $1,000 off of you, and we will give you this one thing that will be good for pretty much everything how we define computing here in the 21st century.
Yeah, I think to Alex's point earlier, why there's no touchscreen Mac is that Apple has a very successful plane and people are like, please put wings on the car. And they're, no, 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 we're not going to do that. Meanwhile, they're working on a helicopter. And if you look 5 years or 10 years down, I don't think we'll be far ahead of the devices that we have now. And also to Microsoft's credit, I mean, one of the reasons the Surface doesn't appeal to me is that Windows 8 doesn't appeal to me, but maybe Windows 9 will. And then the Surface might be a more interesting device.
Well, and I think that, I mean, for me, the limitations, I think about this every time I travel, which is often why I'm still using a laptop, you know, because today I was in like economy and I'm like this little, like the back of the plane and I can't open my laptop and I'm just, and I was like, why am I still doing this? Why am I not using the iPad? Well, the first reason is because I can't type fast enough and I don't like any of the keyboards that I've gotten from my iPad. And number two is that it's not a good mail client. You know, that's the number one problem that I have with an iPad. And the number one reason it doesn't go out is just it doesn't manage. If you're getting 400 emails a day, it does not, you can't use it. Like it goes into like, it doesn't cache enough of them. I just want to say, here's the deal. I'll give you 10 gigs on my iPad. Just don't keep it on the, you download it all like my computer. You know, like just give it, to, just, you know, stop doing that because it doesn't search well. I get disconnected. So I'm trying to find my ticket for United and now I have to try to go and I don't have any Wi-Fi and I don't
Alex
have any.
Alex is going to go pop email soon.
You know, AT&T isn't working.
So many things. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's it. It's just that those are the two things. Like yeah. If I had a good keyboard and I had and it just would download my freaking mail, all of it.
Have you tried any of the third party mail apps?
Do they download all of it?
Nobody downloads your mail. It's IMAP.
I don't want IMAP. I want it to be on my computer so I can
you
search
can use
it.
Pop, Alex, but it's a pain.
What?
Is there a Pop mail app for the iPad?
No, I want IMAP, but I want it on my computer.
IMAP.
It is. This is my computer now is IMAP, but it downloaded it all. Oh, it's okay. Not Pop. It's not, but it's, I want to be able to, you know, because the thing is the problem is that the search engine is, you know.
You're using a Gmail, right?
Yeah.
That's part of the problem because that's not really IMAP either.
But it works. I mean, here's the deal. It works on my computer.
Right.
Like my computer works fine. Like I can find everything that I'm looking for. I just can't find it on a.
What do you use on your Mac, Alex, for email?
What?
He uses Apple Mail.
Apple Mail?
I use both. Well, here's what happens is I use Apple. I don't use mail on my phone or my iPad. I just tell everyone you got to text me or use Hangouts. You know, like you know, like if you want me to look at something, just text me. Forget it. Just like if my computer's not open, you just got to text me. I'm done with email. I hate email. So anyway,
but I think that points out that as much as I love the iPad, I still have to acknowledge that it's very clumsy at so many different things. Like I was moderating a panel on Friday. All I had, and I was having just basically a slide deck behind me, but for the big screen. So while people on the panel were talking about things, I could call up images so that they could, you know, the audience could see what they're talking about, and. All I had to do, and this is you're listening to what I'm saying in increasingly angry tones to my iPad. All I want to do is take 11 JPEGs from here and have them on here. When they're connected to a wire like this, I should not have been spending more than 38 minutes trying to make that damn thing happen. And think about if I had an Android tablet, I could just copy them over. If I had a Surface tablet, I could just copy it over because it would be a real computer with a file system. So this is the sort of thing that I think that we're going to be confronting as the years go by. We love our iPads. We love our notebooks. We want our notebooks to be more like tablets and our tablets to be more like notebooks. And I do think we're coming to an age where it's going to start to be silly for me to be traveling with three different multi-touch devices. I'm going to expect that I'm going to have one device that works really great for everything. And it's not because it's a fridge toaster. It's because it's really the direction that computing should be headed.
Did you guys see the new iPad commercials yesterday?
The new ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can play those.
They had Ride.
Targeted at Beijing.
Slow Ride.
Interesting.
Yeah, Slow Ride, and that was a music one from China.
Come on and take a slow ride.
It's part of the Yourverse campaign.
Yeah. Do you want the Detroit cyclists first?
Yeah, the Slow Ride. I think that was more interesting.
All right.
Of the two, because it's more productivity. The other one was more artistry.
Hold on. We'll start over. What are you doing? Are you still looking for Groot?
No, I'm playing it over my side.
Okay, let's play it one more time. Oh, you're playing it over there.
Don't worry about it.
Well, I kind of worry about it. Let's start over. Hey, Apple Mail. They put that in just for you.
Damn, I'm fresh.
What is what you want?
So if you're watching, this is, if you're not watching, this is something to do with Detroit and bicycles.
Yeah, if you go to apple.com/iPad, they have an actual page set up for all this, and they have a longer video where he explains what the slow ride is, but also how he uses his iPad for social networking, for communication, for sketching, for planning, for weather prediction, for all.
So is this a particular person?
Yeah,
or it's a group? The slow ride
it's
group.
A person who started the group. But the interesting thing is there seems to be a disconnect when people talk about iPad and productivity, is that some people believe productivity is only enterprise. It's only
right.
using a computer with Oracle or with Microsoft or with you know, one of those sorts of systems. And other people believe that there's a whole new generation of productivity that don't use, you know, might not use Office, might not use Oracle, might not use Salesforce, but they're doing things like this, or they're running a startup out of a coffee shop, or they're providing
medical treatment to people
in the field.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's mobile and it's accessible, because these you can't strap a beige box computer on your back and run to the top of a mountain or go deep sea
diving. But an iPad's not exactly ideal on a bicycle either.
Well, it's you can put it in a backpack very easily and take it with you and have these meetings. And it again, it disintermediates the whole keyboard and mouse and the computing things. So it's not a hammer, it's a screwdriver. So you don't want to knock nails with it, but you do want to turn screws with it. And in that context, I think that's, you know, if we try to use it for a traditional computing task, it's still not there yet, but it does things a traditional computer either can't go to, or it makes it easy enough that people who found traditional computers unapproachable can finally get benefit from computing.
That is, by the way, Jason Hall. He's the co-founder of the Slow Roll City Bike Ride in Detroit to kind of promote the rebirth of Detroit. And this is the Apple page. I like it that they do these pages at the Apple site.
They're gorgeous.
Yeah, because it really... the ad itself is a little cryptic and quick. And
if you scroll down, they have layer like that image of parallax. So the guy on his bike go by faster.
Oh, look at that. It's kind of weird. Yeah. Wow. This is they call this parallax, this new style. I was asking our web designers, that thing where you have a big picture and then you scroll down? What's that called? He said parallax, and that's probably because of effects
like
this. Track.
Like all my old Amiga games use that to try to do my old Nintendo games.
What do you have? It's a CSS videos. Thing? You have foreground and background, one moving slower? That's interesting. I like it. Is it happening here too? No.
Can't tell all the pictures.
Yeah, that one's not. So that's one. And then here's the one from China. This is Yao Band, a Chinese musical group, I guess. Yao Band musicians. Maybe they're not Chinese. Oh, yeah, they are. Okay.
Yeah.
Show them using a Chinese email, Chinese maps, playing Chinese pool.
International is a big part of Apple Store.
Oh, he's recording. I get it. He's sampling. That's cool.
Although I would always...
He's sampling with his iPad. You'd probably want a real mic, right?
A real mic. They make those.
And then he's using
an Apple doesn't want to show you that because, of course,
it's not Apple.
That would be complicated. It wouldn't be simple.
Right. He's got everything he needs to record samples. And he's got a little MPC on the iPad. That's cool. Yeah, it's not exactly high fidelity.
No. But what I will say is that, well, and for this kind of mix, you may not need it.
Right.
You know.
Yao Band.
But what I will say that the creative apps that are being created for the iPad are stunning. Like, I mean,
especially music. I mean,
no, the music apps are. I mean, it is like that is an area where I don't know if I would use my computer anymore for a lot of those things, especially when you're interacting with things live and you want to have it right in front of you. You know, I think that those are great. I mean, even the Mackie one. The Mackie has the one that's got a little shell that you pop the iPad into. We have one, and it's. It's a little simplistic.
The Apogee
really
mic,
nice.
Which is a digital mic you plug into the Lightning port, and it does a good job.
I just got the new Mickey from Blue Microphone that has a Lightning in for a review.
That would be the ideal way to record, right? Is something with digital record, you know, interface capability.
Yeah, I mean, you really want a great preamp and I mean, because it doesn't matter once it's digital, but what you do need is a good analog to digital converter. Yeah. So you get a really good, really good preamp and a really good AD, and you could hook it into an iPad and you'd get the same thing you get on your computer.
It does really say that Yao Band captures audio samples with the iPad. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say with the iPad mic, though, just in the TV.
Yeah. You watch the longer video on the site, they show you actually him doing it and him doing jams later with other street musicians using the city sounds. Yeah.
Yeah. Looks like he may also be using an iPhone in some cases, too, in that video. This is cool. creating a bicorn baseline with iMachine, turning billiard balls into beats with iMachine. iMachine is a third-party iPad app.
I'm sure that we all know this, but I was talking to a developer about what happens when you end up in one of these ads.
Yeah.
And he said it's, you know.
You sell a lot of copies of the.
He said it was $250,000 in a week.
Wow.
Like, you know, he had a little ad.
An ad for your product.
I know. He just flowed right. And that was the first week, but he goes, basically, I don't need to. I went from being this struggling little guy that was making some money on it to not having to work anymore. I'm working on other apps now.
It's not like, though, you can write a letter to Apple and say, could you please feature my app?
I was actually startled. A friend of mine wrote me and he said, I'm in the new Apple ad. And I said, what are you talking about? And it turns out that he had, and I didn't really know about this, he had made a water pH meter, something that could measure pH in water. And they showed it off in the last iPhone ad and he'd made an app that went with it. This is a guy I've known, you know, 12 years. And suddenly, that's something he made in his out of his home and started building is in an Apple ad.
And then on the webpage, they do highlight the apps that
exactly.
they're using.
Well, and they didn't do this at first, but then it became this big deal because people, I mean, like me, I mean, I would see stuff in the ad and, like, oh, I want to find that. And it was hard to find the apps, and they've obviously made it a lot better.
It's cool. Very neat. Apple has now, in you know, when you first get an iPad and you plug it in, they suggest to get the most out of your iPad, here are some great free apps to get you started. And of course, Pages, Numbers, Keynote. They've added Beats Music, which is not free, but can you use it for free in any way? Or I guess 2 weeks free. But you have to buy a subscription to use Beats Music, right?
Is there an ad model on that as well? I don't know.
It's still U.S. only. I can't test it.
Still on Spotify. My playlists are too.
You know what? We played with it yesterday on iPad today, and actually kind of like the idea, and Jimmy Iovine said this right when they started Beats Music, We think human curation is still the best way to figure out what you want to listen to. So they do some really interesting things. For instance, you make a sentence that will be the songs that you will get to create your radio station. So you have words. It's like refrigerator magnets that you can pull into a sentence. Like, I want to boogie down with my pants off on the beach late at night. It makes that sentence. I'm not kidding. Like, one of them is that. And then it makes that station for you. Mm-hmm. And so that's one way they do it. The other one is when you first sign up for Beats Music, it asks you for a number of different categories that you like. So it's very visual. It's nicely done for the iPad. And they really do focus on curation, on human curation. So I think that does, you know, it's not been taking off because, frankly, they were late to the party. Everybody's got Spotify and RDO and everything else.
Pandora. Google all the songs I know.
But this one, you know, I was pretty impressed by it. Not enough to go out and buy it, but...
And that's the problem. But Apple can fix that. I mean, they've got a lot of... Yeah.
They could build it into iTunes Radio and solve the whole problem right there.
And everyone in America and Australia can enjoy it.
Yeah.
But that's why we're seeing...
Not that you're bitter.
That's why we're seeing as part of the suggested apps. Part of this campaign is going to have to be to make sure that people are linking Beats with Apple in the public eye to make it think that this is part of your Apple experience, the fact that you have this really cool Beats logo that you've been sticking on your skateboard for a couple of years.
Yeah, here's the iPad interface. I'm at a party and feel like celebrating with my BFF to hip-hop. And then you play the sentence, and it's going to be a radio station based on a sentence.
Podcasts and iBooks are going to be default apps. Maybe one day Beats will be a default app, too.
Yeah. Well, it kind of is. When you put it in that list, that's if, you know, the big button on this says download all. It doesn't say download that one, and that one. It says download all or not now. So, the you know, most people who get a new iPhone or iPad will press the download all button and get those
free,
all installed.
Yes, please press.
Yeah. What else are you going to do?
It's going to be fascinating to see in a year's time what happens to that interface too.
Yeah,
It looks great. It just doesn't look very Apple-like. So it's curious to see if they're going to retain their own design aesthetic.
Especially because it's cross-platform, and it's apparently going to stay on Android and Windows Phone too. So the interface maybe can't be too Apple.
Right. iOS drops to 67% enterprise share in the second quarter. According to Good Technology, this is their semi-annual mobility index report, activations by platform. Android up 32% to 32%.
IBM will fix that.
And Windows Phone flat at 1%. Yikes.
IBM won't fix that.
No. That's got to gripe Microsoft, because Microsoft actually has a pretty good story with Windows Phone in the enterprise. But nobody wants Windows Phone.
And they spent so much money to get Nokia that it's So you got to imagine that in Nokia's defense, Windows Phone has been not quite finished for a couple of years. And especially in 2014, we're seeing a couple more of those puzzle pieces click into place.
Yeah.
And by 2015, it could be definitely something that is a painless alternative to Android and iOS. But is anybody going to care at that point?
I saw the very first one, other than like in here in the Twit brick house. I saw my first Windows Phone in the wild, you know, in D.C. And I walked over to the guy. I was like, so what do you think? What
it's
do you
like
think of
noticeable, it? Noticeable, isn't it?
Like he was working on it. I was like, what do you think? And he goes... Because, oh, I'm getting an iPhone this fall. I was waiting for some guy to give me a recommendation and show me like why it was so great. And he was just like,
why don't you borrow my 1520 and play with it?
But I got it.
Our Windows Phone community, I mean, they are so engaged. They are so happy with it. I mean,
I think it looks cool.
Outside the U.S., but they are
Everybody I know who has a Windows Phone, they don't use it just because it was assigned to them or because, oh, well, I fell for the hype and it's okay, but I'm not going to buy another one. They absolutely love it. So it's definitely finding its audience. I also should say that the third plug for Boston Comic Con from last weekend, it's another one of those events where my eyes are really peeled for what kind of technology other people are using because everybody's taking pictures with their cameras. And I would almost say that the iPhone was a minority device at this function. And we're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of people. Almost everything I saw was a Samsung phone, or and I actually saw a great many Nokia phones out there. So it's if we really can't ignore the fact that there are a lot of phones out there, and a lot of them are telling very compelling stories for certain types of consumers. And so that iOS 8 is going to be a big deal because this is going to be the first time that Apple can say, we didn't just make it thinner this time. We actually made it do cool and interesting new things that you might dig.
If you worked at Apple and your name was Sam Sung, you might feel a little bit left out in the cold. Sam left Apple. He was a Apple specialist at the Apple store. Left Apple, has decided to sell his last remaining business card with the name Sam Sung on it, his Apple employee ID, and his T-shirt autographed. Here's the good news. He's selling it for charity, Child's Wish. Already $80,000 bid for this.
Super important to say he's selling the card and giving you the lanyard and the T-shirt for free.
Oh, he can't. That's interesting.
Yeah.
He was at the Apple store in Vancouver, actually, the Pacific Center store. You know, I think people must be doing this for charity. You know, and by the way, sometimes you see these things. We sold stuff at the Screensavers for charity. Most of the bidders weren't real, and we ended up not raising much money because they were lying.
Right.
But what eBay does now is they restrict it to pre-approved buyers. So the seller gets to say whether you can bid or not, and you have to kind of, I presume, demonstrate that you have the ability and intention to pay. So I'm guessing that is a real $80,000, and that's great.
Hopefully the Samsung and Apple executives will get in on the bidding.
It'd be funny, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It hangs in the Samsung corporate lobby.
It'd be nice. Well, I would love to think that at some point there was the lawyers came in and had to talk to a senior Apple executive and say, we have to shut this down because we can't let this logo merchandise. And there was, and that went up to the top level, then back down to the bottom level and said, okay, we've decided we're going to address this by being the top bidder on this. And that's how we'll make sure that does nothing. So we got a quarter. It's for a good charity. It's good. We just got the checkbook open.
I love it.
They're going to snipe it at the last minute.
Yeah. Boom.
Someone at Samsung had the exact same idea, and it was to go for $80 million.
Oh, that'd be so awesome.
J.K. Shin and Tim Cook at Down to the Wire.
Oh, that'd be great. Should I press the button now? No, wait. Wait, Tim. Now? Can I press it now? No, wait, Tim.
Have a clover. Relax.
I want to press it. No, Tim. All right.
Hold. Hold.
Now! We're going to take a break, come back with your picks of the week. Gentlemen, get ready. But first, a word from Audible. Audible.com, the 150,000 books strong. I bet it's more than that now. I should do another count. If you do an empty search, you can see how many titles they have at Audible.com. More than 150,000, that's for sure. Great books, too. All the new stuff comes out on Audible.com. Everybody's realized. In fact, we were just talking yesterday. What a great interview on triangulation with the author of The Martian, Andy Weir, and I highly recommend it if you didn't hear that. And if you haven't read the book, you must read it. But what's interesting to me is that when Andy sold the rights, he sold the audio rights first and then sold the book rights. And I think that nowadays that's not unusual, that the audio rights are important. And that's why Audible has everything, including Andy Weir's The Martian. Highly recommend it. It's going to be a movie with Matt Damon, Ridley Scott directing next year. But you'll see the movie in your head, because when you listen to audiobooks, there's no budget that could build a set as good as the set you build in your mind, that could build the whole story. I love listening to audiobooks when I drive, when I'm at the gym, when I'm cooking, cleaning, walking the dog. Audible.com, if you go to audible.com/MacBreak right now, you can get a free book. You'll be signing up for the Gold account. That's a book a month, plus the daily edition of the New York Times, the Daily Digest, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, your choice. And you don't pay anything for that first 30 days. If you cancel before the next month, you pay nothing. However, your book is yours to keep forever. So pick wisely, Grasshopper. There's so much good stuff here. You know, they also have, and I have to mention this, the great courses. All of them now are on Audible. For instance, wouldn't you love Professor Neil deGrasse Tyson teaching you about unsolved mysteries in the inexplicable universe? It could be your pick. The great courses are there as well. What do you listen to these days, Andy? You always have some great recommendations.
I actually had two lined up, because I actually listened to that exact same Triangulation podcast, and so of course I bought the book. So
you're gonna love it.
It sounds like exactly up my alley. The next thing I have actually on deck after that is a book called Console Wars, which I have not, which it was released a little bit earlier this summer. I haven't gotten around to.
Also, and a Triangulation interview.
Yeah,
Blake Harris. Yeah.
Set up as the story between Sega as the lowly underdog, trying to fight Nintendo back when they were still Nintendo and not Nintendo.
Yeah.
To actually get a console on the market. And it really, I've only read reviews of it so far, and I've talked to one person who actually recommended it to me. And it really is framed as this a very nice sort of a movie type tale of, here is the person who came into Sega, who was the person who needed to come in to say, no, here's how you want to get Corleone, I'll teach you how to get you want to get the King of Chicago, here's how you get the King of Chicago. And basically laid out the plan that here's what we can do that they can't do, all the way up to now we're going to have this adorable character called Sonic the Hedgehog, and that's going to make us everybody want to play this game and on this console. And
it looks like
a great story.
It is, actually Sonic the Hedgehog's, they talk about how they got, it was a contest, and his original name, and I wish I could remember what its original name was. It was something terrible.
Yeah, and apparently he was a lot like meaner looking and
yes.
like dangerous looking.
Yeah, teeth,
and
they said, sharp
no, 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 no. We have to make that. Not only does this have to look good for kids, but also we want girls to really think this is a good character. And let me show you about the culture that says that this is going that you need to have. You know, it's everything I've read about this said that this is a really great novel type story. I like a lot of nonfiction, but I love nonfiction that's written in the form of a novel where it seems like there's a character and a building storyline. And everything I've read about this means that this, okay, I will use one of my Amazon Audible credits to pick this one up.
And watch The Triangulation after you do, because it's great.
Ended?
Yeah, really great stuff.
Go ahead. One last plug for Audible. I get more housekeeping done because yes. I've got audiobooks.
Yep.
Because I remember the last time that once a year, you really do realize that you have to do like a total top to bottom baseboard to baseboard cleaning of the kitchen. And I've been putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And that's when I acquired Neil Gaiman's Ocean at the End of the Lane. And so not even intending to get the whole job done in one day, I started started off by like clearing a kitchen counter and scrubbing it down. And 6 hours, I did not want to leave the kitchen because I wanted to get to the end of the story. And so I wound up cleaning the entire kitchen, getting all this done in one afternoon, only because I wanted to find out how this book ended. And that's ever since then, it's like, okay, here's this awful piece of housekeeping. Here's a clean out of the garage I absolutely don't want to do. Let me find a good 12-hour audiobook that I can actually, that'll make me stick to it, because I just want to keep cleaning and keep finding out what happens.
There is a good recommendation for Audible. Your house will be cleaner.
That's the new ad. That's the new ad. Audible, your house, a clean house.
Audible.com/MacBreak. Get your first one free. I think you will enjoy it. You know we all love Audible. And if you're not a member yet, now you know you ought to be. Let's get our picks of the week. We'll start with you, Renee Ritchie.
I have two quick ones. I mentioned it earlier. The one is the Mikey. I always say it Mickey by accident, but it's the Mikey Digital. It's the new version from Blue Microphone, and it's got the Lightning adapter on it. And with it, you can record much better quality audio.
Oh, and it plugs right into it, which is kind of cool. Yeah.
It is really cool. We used the previous one to record, you know, we didn't get all Alex Lindsay about it, but we used it to record our interviews at CES.
That's a new phrase. I got all Alex Lindsay about it.
Well, no, Alex is like a several levels higher than that.
I'm going to have to go all Alex Lindsay on this one's butt.
This is me attempting, you know, to move my pawn a couple squares down the board. But it worked really well. It was so much clearer than the built-in microphone. You could change the direction in many ways. It's just, if you're going to do interviews or recording or anything, if you're going to sample, you know, pool tables with your iPhone or iPad, this is just a much better, much more intelligent, much nicer way of doing it.
Mikey, M-I-K-E-Y Digital. How much is it? It's not an Alex. Let me press the buy now button. I'll find out.
I think it was just under $100.
No, that's not bad. Given that it's, $99.99 on Amazon.
Yeah.
Plugs right
and,
in.
And I've used them all. We're reviewing this one right now, but so far it's been absolutely excellent. Neat. The other thing I wanted to mention, it's more self-serving, but I wanted to make sure people knew about it, is we're changing the way we do a lot of the podcasts that I've been hosting. So the ones that are, you know, the Android Central, the iMore show, those are staying where they were. But the other ones are moving to a new home. It's got a temporary shelter set up right now on iTunes. Put the links in the show notes.
Zen and Tech.
It was the only name I had available, and I had to set up the iTunes page. But the thing is, we're not going to be posting those shows on iMore or Mobile Nations anymore. So if you like them, if you do enjoy them, and you want to keep listening to them, you'll have to go to iTunes or RSS for now.
Oh,
just
interesting.
To make sure people knew that.
Do you own these yourself personally?
Those are my shows, yeah. Well, mine and my co-host's shows.
I see. The TV show, Review, Debug, and Iterate.
Yeah, Debug and Iterate, we might keep posting, you know, on iMore just because it's a crossover audience. It's very familiar subject matter to them. But the other ones, you'll only be able to find them there. And people will email me and say, why didn't you post it? Where is it? Where is it gone? So I want to try and preemptively let them know that they can still find them there.
So go to iTunes, search for Zen and Tech.
Yes.
And you'll be able to find the whole list of Zen and Tech podcasts.
And I'll put the link somewhere handy. And I've made sections there. The nice thing about having them separate is I can make my own sections. So we have one there, like, for example, with Apple Legends, where we just have all the interviews we've done with people at Apple.
That's nice.
And this week we're recording. People asked for this, so we're going to do this, a double header with Nitin Ganatra and Don Melton. So we'll get Apple's iOS app guy and Apple's Safari guy sort of talking about why they made the decisions that they made.
Well, you get some good gets.
Really?
That's
lucky.
Awesome. That's not luck. That's skill. I know. Alex Lindsay, your pick.
So in a previous episode.
Yes.
We found our host looking for headphones. We talked a little bit about the Bose, the Quiet Comfort acoustic noise canceling headphones. Yeah. And I went ahead and ordered some.
Oh, because you didn't like the idea, but I wanted to see
what it looks like. So I ordered a pair. Here's what I'll. They're not replacing my Edimotics, but I do like them for the plane. So
now, did you get the over the ear or the in the ear?
In the ear.
Ah, these are different.
Yeah, okay. So these are in ear. These are the Quiet Comfort 20i. I guess they're, you know, iPhone, you know, microphone, mm-hmm. everything else. About $300.
They sell them on the Apple Store. So
yeah, they sell them on the Apple Store. Sell them on Amazon. Mm-hmm. I got them on Amazon. Anyway, so they're very comfortable in the ear. I like them really get in there, like with the Edimotic, and it's not quite that good, but it's pretty good. It's a little bulky, so there's that little amplifier at the bottom or the little controller, and I always forget to turn it off, so I burn its battery out. so I'm just not used to that habit. They do feel a little bit more delicate, so I do keep them in the case, all the time when I'm not using them. I don't like it because that little power supply is right near my iPhone. I tend not to be wanting to walk around with it. That's what I found myself sensitive of walking through the airport with it on, just because it's bouncing around a lot. So I still like the Edimotics for that. They're a little less bulky, but I will say that it's quite a thing to be sitting in the plane and you hear this shh, and you hear everyone, and you just turn it on and it goes shh, you know, it's gone.
Wow.
You know, and
so it is active cancellation, even though they're in-ear monitors.
It's active cancellation and in-ear. I will bass response. It'll distort a little bit with really, really heavy bass. That's one thing I noticed. So really heavy bass will cause it to distort. It doesn't get as loud, but you don't really need it as loud. I think it gets as loud as you safely can make it. I know. But the it also is funny if you get your head against something like a bus or something like that. I was taking the airporter back one and it does this kind of weird vibration thing that's a little odd because it's picking up it you know, the noise cancellation can have its own errors, but in a plane environment or in a loud environment, it's actually it's a really great solution, and I'm happy I have them. As I said, I don't think I'd spend as much time walking around with them, you know, as I do with the Edimotics. But
you live on an airplane, so I'm sure this is something.
Spend a lot of time on it. Yeah, and it really makes everything else go away, and you really are in your own little world. Like when I'm working away and I turn those on, I really, you know, don't really hear anything about, you know, which it might be bad if I figure I'll feel the G's if we're going down. So I'm not worried about that.
And I noticed they have two different versions, one with a microphone and one with a microphone for iPhone and iPad.
And I don't think that changes the price. It might change the price a little bit.
It doesn't change the price.
Yeah, so get the one. Why would you? I guess the only advantage is you would have it.
You
would
have it. Skip.
Well, yeah. No, it still does that. It still has the middle one. But I think that one of the differences is that it's a T. So the one without the mic will be a TRS connector, uh-huh, as opposed to the one with the mic will be a TRRS connector, which can be a little funky when you're plugging it into some things. So when you plug a lot of headphone receptacles, if you put a TRRS, it's tip ring ring sleeve instead of a tip ring sleeve. You know, you have to sometimes pull it out just a little bit to get the right full signal. So I think that might be one reason that you'd want a
standard one.
Standard one, but if you're listening to the show, you probably want the TRRS.
You know all about your TRRS. You know what kind of sleeve you want.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, that's it. Oh, one last thing. My other tip. The next Final Cut user group is this weekend, or is this Thursday. So this Thursday at 6 o'clock. So we're going to try this virtual Final Cut user group thing again. You can go to bit.ly/FCPXUG2, user group 2. So it's Final Cut 10, FCPX, UG for user group 2. And that'll take you to the Hazio account. And we actually have calendar invites now. You can like sign up.
Cool.
And so, you know what? We're bringing in some of really the experts of experts of Final Cut. We're bringing them in from LA and all over. So you definitely want to check that out. It'll be 6 p.m. live stream. Pacific Standard Time on Thursday.
I think you're right. I'm looking at this. It does look like a tip ring, 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 ring.
For the iPhone. It's TRRS.
Yep. It's the Bose Quiet Comfort 20i headphones. $300, but worth it.
Well, you spend a lot of time on the plane. You know, it just really depends on how much time you...
And I can back him up on this.
You like them too.
Yeah, I flew with Brian Brushwood and he had them. And it's kind of amazing that you have them on, you have them off, and the moment you flip them on, all of the noise in the airplane just disappears.
You think better than the over-the-ear ones?
Yes. Well, it's harder to sleep with the over-the-ear ones.
Right.
Well, the other thing is the reason I don't like the over-the-ear ones is because I have a very constrained supply of space in my bags. So the over-the-ear ones is just way too much case, you know, for me. Right. So I actually own the over-the-ear ones as well. I just don't use them because I don't want to pack them.
And you have to charge them ahead of time, or you have a little box that charges.
You charge them ahead of time.
Yeah.
But I always have those. I have those little power gen batteries.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm
you
always
use those. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's micro USB charging.
Yeah, just micro USB.
Easy. Easy peasy. Let's get Andy Anacco's pick of the week.
I have a tip and a pick. Last week, or week before, we're talking about the inadequacies of the Apple TV remote. Someone on Twitter reminded me that there is actually a menu option inside settings. If you go down to on the Apple TV, settings to general and then to remotes, you can actually teach the Apple TV whatever remote you happen to already have in your hand right now. So if you've got, so if your cable company gives you a multifunction remote and it has like one of those options for like VCR, you might not be using the VCR, so you just aim this remote at the Apple TV, tell it this is the up button, this is the down button, this is the left button, this is the right button, and now you can use this just as well as the stick of gum, the aluminum stick of gum that Apple gives you inside the box. So I totally forgot about that, and so I would not have found it if he'd not reminded me of it. So that was that's pretty cool. The second one is a neat little sound utility for the Mac called Sound Bunny. And it's a $10 app, 30 days for free trial. What it does is it gives every single app running on your Mac its own individual sound control. And this is useful for a couple of different things. For instance, let's say that you're in a mode in this afternoon where you want to listen to music, but it is really important for you to hear when Skype has someone is calling in for Skype or something like that. You can dim most of what you're doing and make sure that Skype is always the loudest thing in there without having to go from app to app to app to app and use their individual settings controls. The other thing is sometimes you've got an app running that is making more noise than you would like, and you don't want to quit it, but you do need to mute it. And this will allow you to simply mute an individual app. I found this yesterday when I have there's a bug in Safari so that sometimes when an app is making sound, there is no indication in the menu bar, the title bar of the window, that this is making sound at all. And some dumb website was auto-loading music in after about 2 minutes of it being opened. And because it's the end of a workday, I've got like 5-8 different windows, each with 10 different tabs on them. And I didn't want to have to quit Safari and lose my workspace. So it took 20 minutes of my time to track down which one of these tabs was causing all the noise. And if I had had this app installed before, you do have to restart in order to make it work. If I had this done before, I know that I bet it's Safari. Yep, it's Safari. Great. I'll just keep Safari muted and just keep on going because I don't have time to deal with this right now. So $10 is not a lot of money for something that's this useful. And you do get a free trial that you can figure out if it's actually going to enhance your life in a productive and positive way.
And here is a video of Patrick Delahanty's Groot.
Sweet.
Dancing.
That's awesome.
See, just a little time. That's my pick of the week. You can't buy it in stores. You have to know somebody as cool as Patrick and Svetlana.
Yeah, Marvel, watch this and do it.
Does he just do the one dance or does he do other
things? Oh, shut up, Sarah. She didn't get it. She'd never seen the movie. She didn't understand the magic.
I am Groot.
I am Groot. So you want him to have multiple dances?
Hey, thanks for joining us. We do iPad today. Mac Break Weekly. That was iPad today. This is Mac Break Weekly. Every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. You want to join us live? We love it. But if you can't, it's okay. On-demand audio and video always available. After the fact, twit.tv/MBW. Or on iTunes or Stitcher, Xbox, wherever you get your podcasts. You can also use the wonderful apps our independent developers have written for us on all the platforms, including iOS, Android, and even Windows Phone and Roku. But whatever you do, please watch. There you go. Go to twit.tv/apps, right? What is that?
Correct.
Yeah, and then you can see all the myriad ways you can listen and watch and the features. Patrick put that together, too. I thank you for being here. Now, back to work, my friends, because you know what? Break time is over. Thanks to Andy and Alex and Renee and to you, too. Have a good one.